Good morning and welcome to ASI's Tuesday Morning Show, where ASI's most outspoken editors talk promo products. I'm Melinda Lygos, editor-in-chief of ASI's magazines, and we have an unprecedented event on today's show for you. Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for this? I'm going to have Craig play a little clip to give you a hint of who's going to be on the show today.
Marty, you've got to come back with me.
Where?
Back to the future.
What do you think? I think that's awesome. And who do you think it is?
I think it's Michael J. Fox.
Actor and activist Michael J. Fox is going to join us on the show this morning in just a moment. Now, as many of you know, Michael is going to be our star keynoter at ASI Orlando on January 25th, where he's going to share with us the remarkable lessons he's learned from his struggle with Parkinson's disease. And now, anybody in this room, I know some of you have read his book, Always Looking Up, The Adventures of an Incurable Optimist, knows that Michael takes a challenge and turns it into an opportunity. So the keynote in Orlando is going to be terrific, but we are lucky enough to have him right here this morning. Welcome to the show, Michael J. Fox.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good. We are so happy to have you. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. No problem.
All right. So, well, we've got some questions for you. First of all, we'd
I was actually excited. I thought that Chris Lloyd was going to be on. I heard that promo.
That would have been great. Next time we'll book him with you. All right, Michael, well, how did you react upon first being diagnosed with Parkinson's disease? I know it's been a while now.
Well, I was obviously a shock. I was pretty young. I was 29, 30 years old, so I hadn't thought much about Parkinson's as being anything relevant to my life. I mean, maybe something that you see in elderly people he's kind of at a distance from the concerns of a 30-year-old, but it was a shock. I thought I had originally done some kind of physiological injury because my hand was twitching, so I thought I'd hurt my elbow or my shoulder or my thoracic muscle, but no, it turned out to be neurological. So it took quite a while to sink in. I mean, obviously my first reaction was the guy was crazy, and he didn't know what he was talking about. And then I got about three or four opinions, second opinion, third opinion, fourth opinion, and they all concurred. So then it was just a matter of dealing with it. And at first it was kind of a nice light in the closet. It was just something I just didn't want to face or deal with, but eventually over time, especially with the help of my family, I begin to accept it. And accepting it is not the same as being resigned to it. It's just kind of acknowledging the truth of it. And once I did that, then I had a lot of room to move, and eventually was able to share it with other people and then get involved as an advocate and an activist.
All right, well, that ties into our next question, which John Brulman, president of Showdown Displays, he's going to be one of our keynote sponsors, he's going to ask, and we've got John on line one.
Morning, John.
Good morning. How are you, Mr. Fox?
I'm doing okay.
Good, good. Well, thanks for taking my call, and I'll preface my question by saying I've long been an admirer of how much you've been able to accomplish and how you balance all of the things that you do. And I've always wanted to ask you, what does it take to successfully battle a disease like that, and at the same time becoming a force for change and for charity? It's nothing short of incredible.
Well, I say, well, thank you. I mean, it's always funny to answer questions like this because I really didn't feel that extraordinary to me. It all comes to, like I just said, it comes down to acceptance. I mean, when you face a struggle like this, it's a matter of just, again, acknowledging the truth of it and not being resigned to it and not saying, well, this, you know, not playing the result. That's something actually I'll be speaking about when I speak in January, is this idea of playing the result. In acting, we call, you know, a bad acting is playing the result. It's an actor who's already playing the end of the scene. But you have to go through the scene. You have to take every beat, every moment. You have to see what the other actors have to give you, what the writing has to challenge you with, and then you take it from there, and you go moment to moment. And that's really the key thing. And so when you do that, you don't only recognize the loss and what you are losing, but you recognize the opportunity and you recognize the room for growth, and you don't take things for granted. And that's really the key. That's been what's driven me.
Okay, thank you, Michael. This next question is going to be from Michelle Mann. She's a sales service manager for Evans Manufacturing, and she's also sponsoring the keynote in January. And Michelle is on line three.
Good morning.
Good morning.
When you were acting full-time while also battling Parkinson's disease, can you recall a particularly challenging day you had and what tactics you used to get through it?
Well, I think not a day, really, a series of days. I think the hardest were when I was in Spin City. And I had, before I had disclosed to the public that I was dealing with this diagnosis, I, we had a live audience, and so it's all a matter of timing the medication so that I was relatively symptom-free when the audience was there. And it was, I'd sit in my dressing room in the back, and it was kind of right underneath the bleachers where the audience sat, so I could hear them rumbling and mumbling when I was late for to come out to the set, because I was in the back kind of twisting around on the floor, grinding and groaning and shaking and trying to wait for the pills to kick in. And so that kind of drove me to eventually come out with it in public, because I had this fear that people wouldn't, you know, I couldn't do comedy if people knew that I was dealing with Parkinson's. In other words, could they laugh at somebody they knew was sick? And so then I had to just get out of my head that I was sick. It wasn't that. It was just a condition that affected me, you know, time to time. And so I just had to get through those moments and keep my mind focused on what I wanted to accomplish and what I wanted to do, and eventually it would come. It's hard sometimes when you're waiting for relief, and it feels like it's never going to come, but if you just go moment to moment and concentrate on what the goal is and what you want to accomplish, the opportunity will come up. And it always did, and I always got out in front of the audience, and they always laughed. Thank God.
All right, well, this next question is from ASI's CEO and President, Tim Andrews.
Thank you very much for joining us today. You know, like so many people, I've been a huge fan of yours. We're about the same age, and I've followed your career and have been a huge fan. And so I'm glad to have you not only at the show today, but also in Orlando in January.
Of course.
You know, like you, many people in business, our industry, other industries are forced to overcome a lot of different obstacles and keep themselves motivated. You know, what single piece of advice would you give to a business person who's trying to overcome a major personal or professional challenge?
Well, I think that loss is not a vacuum, you know. When we lose something, we you know, for example, with a disease or condition or perhaps a job loss or business setback or a death in the family or any kind of, you know, unpleasant challenge like that, I think it's to see, not at first you kind of have to acknowledge what it's taken from you, but if you really are honest about that, eventually you'll see, again, like I said, the opportunities that it presents. And no loss doesn't create a hole. It's a vacuum. It creates a new landscape where you have new opportunities and new challenges, and it may affect the way you look at things. Maybe because you could before, you didn't follow a certain path because it was easy given what you had to work with, but the loss of any of that stuff you had to work with, maybe you're forced to take a different path. And it could lead to exciting new opportunities and new challenges and growth.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next question is from our managing editor, Joe Haley.
Michael, I have a question on leadership. How can you focus on your own health and the financial and mental health of others around you at the same time?
Well, I think you have to take advantage of the empathy that it gives you. You know, you have to, in order to get through your own challenges, you have to have a certain degree of resilience and like I said, acceptance. But it also gives you empathy and insight into others' problems and others' challenges. I mean, you recognize your own strengths and your own vulnerabilities in other people, and it gives you a way, an avenue in to help them. I mean, again, it's if you can get past, I know for me, if I can get past how it affects me and then look at how it affects other people and the people that work with me and work for me and work around me and just see what, you know, just take a moment to kind of understand what their challenges are and how I can relate to them. I don't have to solve their problems, really, but if I can relate and perhaps offer chances to circumvent or find a way around or through problems, I only have to look as close to my own experience to find you know, helpful information for them or a way to help them through it.
All right. Thanks, Michael. This next question is from Kathy Houston, editor of Advantages Magazine.
Hi, Michael. It's great to speak with you.
Thank you.
Do people need to first find happiness with their own lives, their own personal lives, before they can succeed in business?
I think you can do both at the same time. I think if you find happiness in your own life, you find success in business. I think that, you know, for me, for example, I just go back to the experience I had. When I was dealing with the first few years of my diagnosis, I found that what I wanted to do was work. Just worked nonstop, and worked all I could. The doctors had told me I had 10 good years left to work, and so I was determined to fill it up with as much work as I could. And eventually, as I became more accepting of my diagnosis and more okay with what my day-to-day challenges were, I started to realize how crazy that plan was, and I found myself in New Zealand doing a movie for 5 months while my wife was in New York with my young son and my at that time infant twin daughters. And I thought, this is nuts. What's wrong with this picture? And so I arranged to go back to television and be in New York and be with my family. And so I'm kind of a long way around to your question, but I think it's to try to find balance in your life. And if you can find balance, you'll be able to bring more to your work than you would counterintuitively if you just focused on your work and nothing else. I mean, you need that balance in life. I mean, anything I've done or anything I've accomplished wouldn't be possible without my family and the strength and balance they give me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, this next question is from Andy Cohn, editor of Counselor, and I know he's looking forward to interviewing you later this month for an article in Counselor magazine.
Indeed. Michael, you've obviously had a very successful and varied career. So in looking back on your career, what would you say is the achievement that you're most proud of and why?
Well, I think it kind of leads into what I just said, or leads from what I just said, that I think the thing I'm most proud of in my career is being able to raise a family outside the pressures of the business. I know some people, wonderful people who have raised terrific children in Los Angeles. I didn't think I could be one of them. So we moved to New York and raised our kids back east. And I'd say that the most helpful thing about that is that it's not a mono-industrial environment. They deal with kids from all different walks of life, certainly some whose parents are in the entertainment business, but others that are in other professions and other crafts and trades. And again, it gives them a wider experience. And I think that's been the accomplishment I'm most proud of. I mean, all the individual experiences I've had, I look at them as just that, experiences, not necessarily accomplishments, because they're really a product of the contributions and the support and the help of other people that I've worked with. But I'd say that Tracy and I are really proud of being able to have careers and do what we do, but at the same time raise kids that frankly, my kids didn't see Back to the Future until they were like 10 or 12 years old. So it's I'm very proud of that, and I'm proud of my kids.
That's great. Well, I know, I think all of us in this room, except maybe, I don't know, Vinny, probably saw Back to the Future in the theaters.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Five times I saw it in the theater.
You're updating yourself. The 25th anniversary this month. I went out to Los Angeles in a couple of days, and I think there's a few festivities around that.
That's fun.
That's great. Well, Michelle Bell's here, editor of Supplier Global Resource, and she has a fun question related to acting.
I do, Michael. My favorite role of yours is the role you played in the movie The American President. Lewis, the president's assistant. And I was wondering what your favorite role is that you've played.
Well, I love that. That was a great part. I had a good time with that. And working with Aaron Sorkin and Rob Reiner and Michael Douglas. I'd worked with Michael Douglas's father previously, and so it's cool to get the cross-generational experience of the Douglas family.
I bet.
But I don't know. You know, I think just pure acting kind of challenge was something I did recently with Dennis Leary, a show called Rescue Me.
Rescue Me. You were great in that.
Well, it was so cool because Dennis called me up and said, I want you to play this kind of bitter paraplegic guy, paralyzed. And I said, you realize I can't move, but I can't stop moving. The feature of my condition is that I can't be still, and you want me to play a guy in a wheelchair. And he said, you'll be great, you'll be fine. And it turned out to be a really great experience. But everything I just did recently, an episode of The Good Wife, and I did a Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David. And so I keep a little bit busy. And so each new experience is, I'd say, the last thing I did is the most fun thing I did. But going back in the past, I mean, certainly Alex Keaton and Marty McFly were two kind of tentpoles in my career and really gifts and great experiences, and I got a lot out of them. And
how many people on the street still see you and call you Alex P. Keaton?
Alex and Marty McFly. Or, well, my wife calls me Mr. Mayor because we walk around New York and it was like, hey, how you doing? And I can't buy a cup of coffee. So it's good. My career has really been giving me so many blessings. And the greatest thing that it obviously set up the opportunity now to be involved in fundraising for scientific research and to hopefully move the dial a little bit on this mission.
Absolutely. Okay, well, this is a question we ask every person who comes on the show. Obviously, we're in the promotional products industry. So what are your favorite promotional products? Do you have any special logoed item in your home or in your office?
I thought about this, and it's funny. I have tons. I love
swag. I bet
you
do.
I love stuff. We certainly have, with our foundation, we have a group called Team Fox, which are the grassroots advocates, the local people who do, pancake breakfasts or car washes or those kind of drives in order to raise funds for Parkinson's, and we call them Team Fox. And we send them Team Fox logos and Team Fox hats, and so I have a lot of that gear, and I wear a lot of it, and my kids wear a lot of it. And I also, the thing I was thinking about was, I golf, and I'm a terrible golfer. And what I find all the time is some of the most effective advertising for me is on golf balls that I find. Mm. I have my golf bag right now. I probably have a corporate who's who of different groups and organizations and companies because I've got their logos on golf balls that I found, including one that says, if found, return to Randy. I don't know who Randy is, but I got his ball. But it's funny. I was thinking about what you guys do, and it reminded me of, in a way, what we do, which is it's all about convening and getting people together and people to share ideas and to share their goals and what they want to accomplish, and that's what we do as a foundation, and it's important to have identification and to have kind of brand identification, whether you're a charitable foundation or your business or whatever, to have an image that represents you and that's recognizable and that people can wear with pride that are associated with you.
Thank you very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure to have you this morning, and also we're all looking forward to seeing you in January at the ASI show. And for our listeners, if you haven't yet registered for the ASI show, you can do that right now at www.asishow.com, asishow.com, and we've got quite a number of different ways to see and interact with Michael J. Fox while he's in Orlando, and take a look and come to the show.
Thanks so much, Michael.
My pleasure. Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Take it easy.
As Tim said, the keynote is on January 25th, 8 a.m. to 9:15 p.m., so be sure you register now. And, of course, that's sponsored by Evans Manufacturing and Showdown Displays. Guys, this is going to be my favorite keynote yet.
He's great.
Yeah, I think so. We've had a lot of great speakers, but I'm really excited.
It's exciting because he's not only a star, he's also really going through a personal issue that so many people can really relate
to.
It's also just very motivational, especially to start the year. People just looking out to start the year to get inspirational stories. I think it's great.
And I read his book, which we're going to have 100 signed copies available at ASI Orlando, the Always Looking Up book. And boy, if you need some inspiration, just read that because you think you're having, challenging day, maybe.
Bad hair day.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I read it the day I hit a deer on the road. And, I was fine. The car wasn't, but
the deer probably wasn't so good.
No, the deer was not fine. But you know what? Then I'm like, I had read that book the night before, and I'm like, this is nothing. So
that's great.
Yeah, that's great stuff. All right. Well, Andy, we're a little late, but we haven't forgotten about you. Give us the industry news in 60 seconds.
All right. You got it. We begin this morning with government news. The FTC said last week that it will be cracking down on greenwashers. In its new green guides, it's telling marketers to do away with terms like eco-friendly and environmentally friendly. These staple terms will now have to be substantiated with proof where companies will be in violation of the new marketing guidelines. Supplier news now. Counselor Top 40 supplier American Apparel has avoided bankruptcy after coming to a new lending agreement with primary lender Lion Capital. The lifeline essentially saved American Apparel from financial disaster, but the company now has to meet newly established profit goals over the next 3 years. It will also be hiring new senior management, although CEO Dov Charney will remain in his current role. In legislative news, the Consumer Product Safety Commission has delivered its final definition of the term children's product within the CPSIA law. The term will now refer to any item, quote, designed or intended primarily for children 12 years of age or younger. Check out Promogram Today for more details. Plus, make sure to see the latest episode of The Joe Show in Promogram Today. Joe, what's on your radar this week?
Andy, we have some new products, including a hoodie that helps you operate your iPod through your sleeve.
Very cool.
Very cool indeed.
It is.
We are going to pause now for a commercial from today's show sponsor, I Promote You. When we return, we are going to find out how to avoid corporate pinkwashing.
This portion of ASI Radio is sponsored by I Promote You. Distributors and salespeople, consider affiliating with I Promote You today. Be more productive, be more profitable, be happier, and retain your independence. I Promote You, the smart choice. For more information, call 800-850-3370 or email opportunities@ipromoteyou.com.
Welcome back to ASI's Tuesday Morning Show, where we just had Michael J. Fox on the show. He's going to be speaking at ASI Orlando on January 25th. We're all looking forward to that. All right, Kathy, we've heard about corporate greenwashing. In fact, right. Andy just mentioned it in his news report.
Did.
But apparently there's some pinkwashing going on. What the heck is that?
Pinkwashing, especially during this, the October month of breast cancer awareness. Right. So I'm sure you've all been seeing pink products everywhere.
There's pink pumpkins all over Newtown.
Really? Yeah, I saw those.
There are.
Well, everything from scouring pads and pepper spray to handbags and handguns are being sold pink. Can you imagine buying a pink handgun?
And pepper spray and scouring pads. Interesting.
Yeah. But you have to be careful because some of these companies really aren't helping the cause. For example, KFC got in trouble recently for selling its Kentucky grilled chicken in pretty pink buckets. But that chicken is known to contain carcinogens.
But they were giving some of the money to charity?
They were giving some of the money to charity. Yeah.
What kind of chicken's got a carcinogen in it?
Anything.
The way it was cooked?
This report says.
Okay.
Yes. So anyway.
Isn't a lot of fried food? I don't know.
It's not good for you.
Does it seem like we mention KFC just about every week?
We do.
My favorite restaurant.
We are killing that company. My God.
And that Colonel. The kids don't relate to the Colonel.
Nobody knows the Colonel.
Tim likes the Colonel.
I love the Colonel. I like fried chicken.
Who doesn't like it? But
I agree with you that this has gone too far.
It has.
Everyone's trying to jump on the bandwagon, mm-hmm. and they've lost sight of the fact that this is a very serious issue.
That's right.
What we're trying to do is get people to do self-exams and to be thoughtful
and
about
be
this and be healthy.
Right.
And I think there's too many unrelated products. So I think when you are selecting promotional products, they really have to be, you know, on target, and they can't be sort of on that fringe. I think it becomes almost disrespectful.
That's right. So that's the bottom line.
All right, there you have it. Well, thank you, Kathy. So there's a lot.
And Tim, what am I over here? Chopped liver.
Excuse me. Thank you, Tim, for your insightful comments. All right, what's all the hubbub? Gap changed its logo, and apparently everybody's freaking out about it.
Everybody did freak out about it. Here's the thing. As of this morning, though, they have announced that they've gone back because that's how much backlash they got.
So it was a new logo for 1 week?
It was a scam. It was a scam. They weren't planning to go to the new logo.
You really think it was a scam?
I think it was to generate. And I think that the whole social media network that all got it been out of shape, mm-hmm. that people, 1,000 people post on their website. Who cares what the Gap logo looks like? You know what? People need to get lives.
I've heard speculation that those postings were fake and that Gap engineered the whole thing.
Well, Gap has no business.
They had 2,000 postings.
Their business is down.
Their sales have not been up since 2005. Okay, every year it declines. Find me a Gap store. I think it's off the radar. I think they're trying to create a big brouhaha over the stupid new logo that was terrible. And I think the whole thing was a big scam. That's what I think. And now to switch back
to the logo after a week.
Well, they didn't even change the logo. The logo on their website never changed.
No, right.
It didn't. It remained the same. Here's the thing, though. Some notes that, you know, we gleaned from this story. If your logo is something so iconic that you're lucky enough that you have consumers that can recognize mm-hmm. it at the blink of an mm-hmm. eye, you know, that's something that's like marketing gold. And
right.
I was thinking
that's
about
true.
In this industry.
That's right.
Don't mess with it.
I would say the ASI
mm-hmm.
logo,
oh, yeah.
the Leeds logo, the Geiger logo. These are logos that you can see and just recognize immediately. Mm-hmm. You don't fool with that. So it leads me to believe that I think that Gap was just trying to, you know, maybe re-energize itself.
Well, also, when you're going to change your logo, they undoubtedly have very smart people there, okay, in marketing, and they've got probably a million consultants helping them on this. You don't – when you change your logo, you actually do it in a forthright way, and you change it every Welsh simultaneously, and every employee knows,
right,
and it all happens in time. The storage signs weren't changed. The logo on the website wasn't changed. It's all just baloney.
That's the second lesson here. Bad communication. Even when people started to criticize it, Gap remained mum and didn't say a word. There was no clarity of the change. There was no forthright communication. It just left people to wonder, which, you know, does beg the question, was that their intent all along, just mm-hmm. to build
yeah.
this buzz?
The CEO's quotes,
he sounds like a buffoon. You know, he's saying we're surprised we didn't look into this. Well, I mean, you're running a multi-billion-dollar place. No wonder the sales keep dropping if you can't even get the logo right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think he needs to examine where he is and pull his finger out of his belly button.
It's a pretty big belly button, this guy. What if it was a hoax? And they were just looking
I think it's ridiculous.
PR.
Why is anybody talking about Gap? Nobody cares about Gap. Nobody shops at Gap. Gap is dead.
Okay. Well, if Gap is dead, we should just move on.
I have a Gap card.
I'm sure you do.
You have a every card.
I know.
UBC shopper.
The people at the Gap and KFC, maybe they don't like us so much.
Maybe not. The Gap logo is iconic, though. All three of my daughters, before they could read, they recognized the McDonald's arches and the Gap logo.
The McDonald's arches.
Yeah. I mean, they should never change those arches. All right. We're going to move on to our favorite things. And since we have Tim Andrews here today, Michelle, Andy, and Joe, and Kathy are going to each show one of their favorite new products. And Tim, why don't you weigh in on each one?
I'll be happy to.
Give a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
Okay.
All right. What do we have? Andy, you have a paperclip?
No, I'm not. I don't actually have the problem. I'm just playing with the paperclip.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're on.
Oh, I'm up? Okay. Mine actually comes from Akron Rule, and it is a kit. I like things that are put together in kits, and it's meant for the education market. There's a pencil ruler, eraser, and pencil sharpener, and I came up with it. First of all, this is in the October issue of Counselor, so you can see it there as well as online today. But I was in my first grade son's classroom the other day for this back-to-school night. And you'd be amazed at the stuff in these kids' desks that is all over the place. So the idea that there's this kit that can, you know, keep things actually in one place, I think would be pretty cool for schools.
What do you think? Would you carry around a kit like this?
I love it. I had when I was in first grade. It had a little slide cover on it. Went back and forth. It was so exciting, you know. And
you probably also had a Trapper Keeper notebook, didn't you?
A what?
No, they weren't around.
Trapper Keeper?
Oh, that was after your age.
Oh, it was not after my age. I love a pencil. A nice kit like that. Why don't you have
it? It also comes with a three-hole punch.
I think that's a three-hole punch I'm not so sure about, but I like the idea.
All right, so we're giving a thumbs up to that one. Michelle, what do you have?
I have, from Logomark, a all-leather briefcase, but inside the briefcase, very Mad Men style, is a bunch of shot glasses and leather coasters. And this is on sale, 40% off for the holiday season. So it's very swanky. It's very hip.
So people think you're all business, but you're actually all party.
In fact, you're on your way to happy
hour.
Just
like a mullet.
You're as far from business as you can be.
Tim, would you carry that into work?
A shot glass is always a gift.
He probably has it.
It would be a good gift, I think. Any hour is happy hour.
All right. Well, there you have it.
Any hour is happy hour.
Joe Haley. Head of the Joe Show. What do you have?
I have a fleece headband that
at least he brought his.
I know.
With
I was
and
gonna.
I'll pass it around. It's a fleece headband with a pocket for an iPod or any other MP3
Who
player.
Makes this?
This is from Limb Gear.
Okay.
And the earbuds are actually woven into the headband itself. So it's great for people who are jogging in these colder months coming up. Also coming up are going to be all the breast cancer walks, and it's going to be cooler in the Northeast and stuff. This would be great for participants to be able to listen to their music, have their iPod there. It's secure. It's not on their arm. It's not in a pocket. Everything's on their head. It keeps them nice
very
and warm.
Cool.
Also good for running clubs. Cyclists.
Very classy.
Now,
the question
Tim,
I have,
you're a big runner.
I am.
So.
My question is, when you put this on your head and you run, because of the weight, does it stay on your head okay? Did they figure that out?
Joe has tested it out.
I have tested it out.
Do you get bruises on the back of your head?
I don't. It's nice and tight. It's nice and snug on my
Looks
big, flat
light.
Head. And there's a little Velcro attachment in the back there, so it keeps my iPod. Just wedge it down there.
This is classy. What's the price point? Do you know what the price point is?
I do not.
We'll look
it
up and let us know.
On our website.
Absolutely.
Put that up. Let us know what that is. This is a good item. I like that.
All right. Kathy Houston,
That's
what do
awesome.
You have?
I didn't bring mine because I ate it.
Okay.
She ate her homework.
It's
literally
custom logoed beef jerky from Minimus.
I love beef jerky.
Yes. I love beef jerky.
Yes. It's a healthy snack. It's high protein and low fat. It's perfect for sporting events, tailgate parties, camping.
Is it logoed on the jerky or on the package?
It's on the package. Okay. It comes in 2-ounce packages, and it comes in 4 flavors. Doesn't this sound like the Spice Girls? Teriyaki, hot, sweet, and spicy, and old-fashioned.
Forget the Spice Girls. That's from Lady Gaga's outfit. Isn't that from her meat dress?
Right.
It's from her, they're making that thing into jerky, you know.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, her meat dress is being made into beef jerky.
That's disgusting.
It's going to be in a Smithsonian Institution.
I don't want Lady Gaga's meat.
Okay.
There it is.
So we all give beef jerky a thumbs up, I think.
Yes.
And Lady
Gaga.
Perhaps.
Everyone loves jerky.
Yep.
All right. Thank you very much, guys, for your favorite tips. All right. Joe Haley.
Yes.
Everything for a while was going offshore. Now, all of a sudden, Made in America is
hot.
Booming.
Hot. It's booming. It's hot. Booming. That's right. A lot of manufacturers coming back to our shores. You know, there's been troubles in China that we've talked about in the magazines and on the radio. But Adweek Media and Harris Polls did a survey of Americans, and they found that 3 in 5 Americans are more likely to purchase a product when the ad emphasizes that it's made in the USA. So people do want U.S. Made products. Only 3% said that they were less likely to buy something if it was made in the U.S. And these are all Americans in this country who took this survey. And one would think that this is accurate, too, that older Americans – are more likely, 75% of U.S. adults over 55 said they're more likely to buy something if it's made in the U.S. And, of course, as you go down the scale, when you get younger people, they're less likely. But 44% of those between 18 and 34 are still more likely to buy something if it is made in the U.S. Mm. And it kind of breaks down by region, too. The Midwesterners were more likely to buy it at 67%, and Westerners are less likely at 57%. So mm-hmm. it's still a good thing. If you're manufacturing products in this country, make sure you emphasize that. And as distributors, if you're, you know, showing products to clients, if they are made in the USA, make sure that they know that because they might be more inclined to purchase.
You know, we've got an article coming out in November, Wearables Magazine, in which one of our writers, Dan Walsh, visited a bunch of factories, apparel factories in L.A. And a lot of them are doing really well right now. I mean, a lot of it's because of inventory issues. Mm-hmm. You know, they're mm-hmm. able to, you know, get things produced faster. So there is a mini boom even in our industry. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
There definitely is, yeah.
I think there may be some import restrictions that are going to come out, too. I think that depending on what happens in the elections, I think we mm-hmm. need to be very mindful of that. I think there could be some real trade restrictions that occur, you know, keeping some goods out or putting tariffs on goods because a lot of concern, you know, if it's not made here, then it's not creating a job in the United States.
Right.
So I think
mm-hmm.
you're going to see a lot of activity in that region.
Well, the tariffs on Chinese-made goods could certainly be coming if they're not going to revalue their currency.
Absolutely.
And on that note, in terms of new laws and regulations, Kathy, what's happening with plastic bags around the country?
Well, around the country, there's U.S. cities increasingly banning or taxing plastic shopping bags. And the CEO of the California Grocers Association actually says the future is in reusable bags. So that's really good news for this industry. All the suppliers that sell reusable tote bags, it's going to be the way that grocery stores are going. You know, some of them are even charging if you use plastic bags.
Well, in California, what was the thing that last month that we reported on?
San Francisco tried to pass a bag banning of plastic bags in retail stores, but it actually got voted down.
Right.
So there are some counties and smaller cities in California that have banned plastic mm-hmm. bags. San Francisco would have been the biggest city in the country to do it, but the vote was nullified.
All right, but the trend is definitely going that way.
Yeah,
it is.
Like Kathy said, mm-hmm. the future is definitely on the other side.
Well, that is good news for the industry. All right, we are out of time. Thanks to today's show sponsor, I Promote You. Special thanks to Michael J. Fox for being on the show today. Be sure to sign up for ASI, the ASI show in Orlando, and check him out on January 25th. Thanks to everyone, and have a great day.